This podcast brought to you by the Bose Headset 10.
Thanks for logging on to AbWeb's continuing coverage of EAA AirVenture from Whitman Field at Oshkosh, Wisconsin. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting, and today I'm talking to my colleague Mark Cook, editor-in-chief of Kitplanes Magazine. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Sure thing.
The current buzz in the experimental segment is the FAA's recent clarification of the 51% builder rule, although I guess I should hesitate to use the word clarification. Since I'm a spam can kind of guy, how about filling us in on the details? It sounds like this is going to get talked about a lot at Oshkosh this year.
Well, I think you're right. It's going to be a big subject of conversation at Oshkosh, particularly with the timing. The FAA just released a draft proposal, if you will, of revised advisory circulars with a 30-day comment period. It was expected it was going to be 60 to 90 days. So theoretically, the comment period ends in the middle of August, and you can bet that that's going to be a big discussion at AirVenture. But let me back up a second and kind of explain what's going on here. The industry as a whole has been evolving rather rapidly in the last five or ten years or so, with more customer assistance, a lot more factory assistance, much more advanced quick build kits. And a general movement from building all the parts yourself and doing a lot of fabrication yourself to very, very complete, very sophisticated kits where the builder is doing really more assembly than pure fabrication. There are some in the FAA who felt that in the industry had simply overstepped the bounds and the intent of building an airplane for education and recreation. So about 2 years ago, an advisory committee was put together consisting of FAA people, representatives from EAA, Dick Van Grunsven, the designer of the RV series airplanes, was the co-chairman on this this committee. And really they went into it looking to create a new set of rules, or at least to look at the rules that we have and say, how can we tailor these rules to kind of get rid of the excesses? How can we make it so that we don't hurt the rank-and-file builder, but we kind of curtail really some of the excesses, and it's truly at the top of the market, to get people to really build their airplanes, because it's well known there are a few designs where the builders will work with customer assistance and not do really what they're supposed to be doing in the programs. That rulemaking, the initial draft, came out in February. There's a lot of talk about it then. The FAA went back into its little hidey hole and said, okay, we're going to start writing the final draft for this. And this being a set of advisory circulars, revised advisory circulars, it's important to note that the FARs are not being changed here. For the FAA to change the actual FARs that govern experimental aircraft is a much more complex deal, invokes a lot of different controls and restraints, if you will, on how federal law is changed. So rather than do that, the FAA is revising an advisory circular, actually a couple of advisory circulars. It's doing some things like combining a couple of things that have been kind of a patchwork quilt of guidance material that's built up over the years into one newer document that seeks to address this. That came out July 15th, again with that 30-day comment period for industry and individuals to say, you know, we agree with this, we disagree with that. And within the new proposals are some fairly striking requirements for home builders.
Comment period ends when?
Comment period ends August 15th. Now, the EAA has said that it has petitioned for an extension. There is ample precedent that an extension should be granted. Doesn't mean it will be, but I think there's a good chance we're going to see another 30 days, maybe even another 60 days on this process. Early in the process, the FAA said it really wanted to have this stuff wrapped up by the third quarter of the year. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see us go through one more round of iterations here with a slightly longer comment period. The FAA goes back and says, okay, we're going to look at these things and maybe have another round of drafts, although it's entirely within the FAA's purview to say, okay, you've had your comment period, here's the final rule.
What are the principal potentially trouble-causing highlights in the new AC?
Well, there are several, one of which is a specific requirement for fabrication. As background, the previous rules joined fabrication and assembly together as one entity. So it would say the builder is responsible for the majority of the fabrication and assembly of the airplane to meet what is, you know, generally known as the 51% rule, although it doesn't say it there, it's really the majority rule. And incidentally, an interesting thing about that is it's always taken to mean 51%. Of the new ruling, or the new advisory circular draft, it actually says more than 50%. There's language that says specifically more than 50%, which doesn't necessarily equate with 51, and we'll get to that in a second, because theoretically 50.001 would be more than 50. So it's something to come back to here. But the new requirements are that rather than have fabrication and assembly kind of joined as one, you get credit for doing either or in any of the various steps in building the airplane. The FAA is now requiring or proposing to require 20% pure fabrication, 20% pure assembly, and 11% that can be either, of course, adding up to 51%. The fabrication thing is going to be very difficult because there's really no good definition of what is fabrication. In several places it says to take from raw stock or material, but how raw? For an aluminum airplane, it's easy to say, fine, we have an aluminum angle extrusion. The builder's expected to cut a notch, drill a hole, file it to shape, put it on, and you can make a reasonable argument that there's some fabrication involved there. For a composite airplane, it's a whole other animal. There are a lot of composite airplanes that have pre-molded shells that are done in molds that are very high quality, that have all of the critical structure laid in for you, which is really, from a safety standpoint, the way it ought to be. The builder, instead, is expected to go in there and do some fabrication from raw material. Well, how raw? Does it need to be raw cloth? Does it need to be raw foam? I mean, the definition really leaves it open to interpretation for the people who are signing off on the airplane.
Does assembly assume that you're sticking something on the airplane or sticking fabricated parts together?
Fabricated parts together. And that's really one of the issues. Assembly is considered, in this case, to be putting together a prefabricated items. Now, in some cases, you have that. In other cases, most modern kits, even the most advanced quick-built kits, have a fair amount of fabrication. Question is, do they really have 20%? Well, in order to sort of create a metric that allows us to add that up, the FAA has created a checklist. It's a 187-point checklist, and it has basically 187 tasks varying from, I have it in front of me here. It'll have anything from, fabricate fuel system components to fabricate propeller. Okay, that's one line on the list. We'll get back to that. For each one of those tasks, there's four columns attached to it. So these columns determine the credit, who gets credit for this operation. The first one is the manufacturer kit part or component. This is all the stuff that you would buy off the shelf or that is part of the kit that you purchase. The second one is commercial assistance. Now, this new listing makes sure that any builders who do receive commercial assistance have to offer credit for it, or at least reconcile the credit for that in the build process. Before, commercial assistance was generally lumped in with the builder's aspect as long as the builder was involved in the commercial assistance, like a builder assist center. The other two columns are total for amateur builder for the assembly and fabrication. So really, for all of these 187 points, you're expected to say, did the kit manufacturer do it? Did somebody help me do it? Did I assemble it, or did I fabricate it? Okay? So it's really a way to define who did what. The problem, and this is a big problem in my opinion, is a lot of items that were free items that didn't either count for you or against you are now on this list, like fabricate propeller. Now, all right, there are lots of guys who are capable of carving a propeller from wood and laminating it and finishing up and getting a perfectly airworthy part onto their airplane, but this is not the average guy. The average guy is going to call Hartzell or Kato or somebody and say, send me a prop, and we're going to bolt it onto the engine. Fine, but you get no credit for it. In fact, you actually lose credit because you have to put a tick mark in that column that says, yes, I bought this part. And now the amount of work that is done by either the manufacturer or by somebody else goes up while your percentage goes down. I honestly don't believe the FAA intended us to all start carving our own propellers or is other things on the list like fabricate exhaust system. I don't think they really want us to all be building our own exhaust systems teaching ourselves how to weld on 321 stainless. I don't think that's the intent, but that's what's on the list.
Fast forwarding here, how does this affect, or how might it affect the Glassair 2-week to taxi program or programs like that?
Well, it's funny. I've been talking to a lot of people in the industry since this came out, and until there is a firm definition on what is fabrication, who is allowed to fabricate it, it's really unclear. I mean, as written, this has a terrible effect on the industry, and in fact, not just on programs like 2 weeks to taxi, but if you were to take this to the strictest interpretation of these rules, I think there are a great many airplanes, great many kits right now that would not pass the test. Supposedly, the FAA went and sampled two airplanes, a Vans RV7 and a Lancer Legacy, used that as the template for this checklist to say, listen, these are airplanes that we know meet the spirit and the idea of the rule. We're going to template these airplanes against what we're trying to do and say, you know, these ought to pass. And theoretically, they do. But with some of these new additions, like fabricate your propeller, airplanes that were, let's say, at the 48%, you know, kits where 48% of the assembly was done for you, the simple addition of, buying an exhaust system or buying a propeller or buying an instrument panel already built by somebody else could very easily put it over the 49% that is considered the maximum for the category. So I think as written, this is actually going to have a negative effect on a lot of the kits that are currently considered to be eligible for the rule.
Okay, thanks for the update, Mark. Listeners should note that Mark will be conducting some interviews of his own during the week on the 51% story, and we'll be airing those right here on AbWeb this week. For more, log on to Kit Plains website at www.kitplains.com. I'm Paul Bertarelli reporting for AbWeb. Thanks for listening.
Presented by Bose Aviation Headset 10. Voted number one for the 7th consecutive year in Professional Pilots 2007 Annual Headset Preference Survey. Today's Aviation Headset 10 delivers a highly acclaimed combination of noise reduction, clearer audio, and comfort that remains unmatched. Learn more at Bose.com/headset.